fishy, fishy.
Good day to all of you listeners and lovers of fishing and women. I am Alex. I am a new saltwater fisherman, naive and a quick learner. We also have Jeannie. She is an avid redfish fisherwoman and has her own boat and does a lot of inshore fishing. We have Heather. She does a lot of offshore fishing and is a big fan of catching sharks. And we also have Dee today, the MacGyver of fishing. And cowering in the corner, we have Frank, who might chime in every now and again, overwhelmed by this female presence.
Yes, there's a large female presence here. How about we get going with a fish report? Heather, what do you got?
We got snook reported down on the lower west wall near Cape Hayes. Also, outside of Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, but you go inside Turtle Bay, you'll find a lot, but you go inside Bull Bay, you'll get a lot bigger ones, and then all the way up into Gasparilla Sound.
As for redfish, they are finding some smaller ones on the east side, the East Keys, also up on Peace River, not really keeper size though. The Myakka Cutoff has a ton of reds, some in slot. Bull Bay and Turtle Bay has some catfish, and Bull Bay and Turtle Bay has some, and you can also
some
find
redfish.
A lot in Catfish Creek.
Yes,
redfish.
It's hard when you have Catfish Creek and redfish in Catfish, so redfish in Catfish Creek. It's hard to do, yes. Okay. There you are, Dee.
It's my turn?
It's all about you. It is the Dee, the time, the place. It's Dee!
Right. Spanish mackerel. Catching tons of them. Tons of them. Just south of Two Pines on the Oyster Bar. They're thick through Cape Hayes all the way to Boca Grande.
All right.
Sharks. There is a pile of them. We got a bunch of little sharks up in the harbor, anywhere between 2 to 5 feet. Bonnet heads and black tips seem to be. They're just thick. Some smaller bull sharks around 41 Bridge, Myakka River. Get some bonnet heads around Cape Hayes. And of course the big boys are still out in the Gulf. The big bull sharks out there on Johnson Shoal.
Jeannie, is there a season for sharks where the bite is much stronger than...
May and June. Now we are in season right now. They come in following the tarpon and spawning.
Well, it's not I wouldn't say a spawn. I would say because they give live birth. So people
making
tend
babies.
To... Yeah, people tend to associate fish with spawn. But sharks are a little different. They actually live birth, and several of them have... like cow nose rays have like one baby, where regular stingrays mm-hmm. can have one to dozen or so. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the sharks are the same way. It's really kind of neat when you watch baby sharks because they're born in a sack and they swim like out of this sack. And I mean, they're born swimming and biting.
I actually just heard a interesting fact about stingrays and cobia. That cobia love little baby stingrays, and they will actually swim behind the stingrays and bump them to force bursts.
Yeah, we call the stingray the cobia pez dispenser.
Another interesting fact about stingrays I learned was those two long protrusions on either side of the tail, those are not testicles.
No.
Which no. I thought they were, but they are actually claspers.
Well, so we know you haven't been around a lot of boys, but the long protuberances are not the testicles.
In case... there were any other misinformed listeners who thought that stingray had large testicles like I did up until Saturday.
Those cow nose rays are something to see, though.
I want to know where you're at.
Yeah, let's talk about the cow nose rays.
I'm supposed to be there.
How about them cow nose rays? So I was out to Captiva about 2 weeks ago. Went out to Captiva, and there was a pile of these little cow nose rays. They're very, very pretty, a sight to see. And they were just right up on the beach, and their wings were coming out of the water. They were just They were like, it was like a little herd of cows. They were just following each other, but they were...
What's amazing about those, this is when they call them to come in the spawn, the cow nose, mm-hmm. but they only give birth to one baby at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So the kinds who go out and they kill multiples of them for shark bait, it's really not a good idea because they're an easy one to run the population down very, very
sure.
quickly because it's literally 2 to 1. I mean, two parents make one baby every year. So they do make good bait. And while most stingrays are actually quite good eating, I don't know that I'd do the cow nose. I do a regular stingray. Those eat actually pretty good.
Butter and capers?
Yeah, you fillet them like flounder, where you cut across mm-hmm. behind the head and make a T-cut and work the meat off of the hard body. And you do it, when you fillet a flounder, you make a T-cut mm-hmm. on the fish, work mm-hmm. the meat off of both sides. And when you do that, then I take and cut them into strips so I can easily cut the skin off. Because when you work it like a flounder, you get that up. But regular southern stingrays actually have quite a bit of meat, but you don't want a little one. It's got to be pretty big in order to get meal out of it.
Is there any benefit to using a cow nose ray over a regular ray for shark fishing? Because I know we go out and we just get sharks.
They're really dumb, and they swim right around the boat, and so they're easy to catch.
We just get rays right on the bar. We both fish for them
yeah.
and get rays on the bar and then go.
The ones on the bottom are the
bit.
Standard stingrays, the
okay.
southern ray, and uh-huh. they populate many, many babies a year. And using those for bait is not a bad thing. Because some of the shark population has declined over the last few years, we have a lot more population of rays, which puts undue pressure because they like eating scallops. Yeah. So some of the scallop areas getting inundated with stingrays and knocking the southern stingray back a little bit, not a bad idea.
But there's no advantage to using a cow nose ray over a regular ray, right?
No, I think okay. a regular, they're both very,
ray
very
is
good
a ray
bait.
Is a ray.
It's just the regular stingrays have a much higher birth rate, you know, 1 to 12 babies. So, you know, they can keep up to predation okay. better, whether it's from human or shark, where the cow nose, they're so cool to watch. They're so beautiful.
Well, that's my thing. They're just so different, so neat. Like I wouldn't want to. I'd much rather use just a regular old ray.
Yeah, I'm just kind of a little squeamish about it because I enjoy watching them so much. Mm-hmm. I don't want to kill one.
Right.
I get a little soft spot for them.
Right. Exactly. Hence my question. That's exactly where I was going with that.
Okay. So, anyway, I'm not sure we're going with this, but what do you when you go out and you catch stingrays for bait? What are you going to do, Jeannie?
Shark fishing, bull sharks. Out in the Gulf.
So where are you finding them? You're bow fishing for them?
Bow fishing for them, yep.
Where do you go looking?
Well, they're on the bar, Burnt Store Bar. They're always on the bar. And just take the
bow. They're easy to see?
Easy to see, yep. They're always there, which is why, you know, you shuffle your feet when you go out on the bar or you go. But we just bow fish for them and then tie them behind the boat, get out there in the Gulf, and just wait for that shadow that looks like a Buick to come up behind you. And there he is.
I'll take a minute to say to fishermen who cut off the stingray's barb, stop. That's their only way to protect themselves.
Defense mechanism.
Just stop doing it.
Does that thing grow back? Like
the barb?
Yes.
No, I don't believe
so. Like, once
so.
They lose it?
Frank, does the stingray's barb grow back? No.
So you're quite the shark fisherman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Teach us something.
What's your favorite bait?
My favorite bait?
Learn us real good. Learn us. You gotta put it where she gets it. The whole teach thing is that you gotta say, learn us.
So do you use rays as well?
I've never used the rays for shark bait.
Okay.
I always use frozen cut bait or live caught catfish.
Okay. And what kind of sharks do you typically go out for?
Any kind. I like the little ones because of the constant action. Throw it in, you catch it. Throw it back, you know.
Wire just, leader?
Yes, wire okay. leader.
How far offshore do you go?
Usually right inshore.
Okay.
We will do the some of the holes, the deeper holes in the harbor.
Like the big 20-foot hole out
yes,
there?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, the middle hole or the most southern one. But here lately it's been more out of in front of Bull Bay and I still haven't caught my big one. I want a monster.
What is your biggest?
My biggest is probably about 4 foot.
Okay.
It's one that you can still pick up and hold. Mm-hmm. I want one that I cannot get in the boat.
And what's your rod and reel setup?
I haven't figured that out yet for a big one. Okay. For the little ones, usually got like 7 foot, 7'6", like 15 to 20, 25 okay. pound.
What size liter?
6,500 reel. Leader.
Oh, you're using about, wire leader.
Yeah, the wire leaders.
Okay.
I think about 60 pound braid mm-hmm. on a 6,500 reel.
Okay.
So you're doing a lot of fishing?
You're free lining, right? Your bait? Or are you using weight?
Weight. Got about a 1 ounce sinker down on the bottom. Depending on the current, we may have to add more.
So is that just drop it down and wait?
Cast it out some ways, then it usually ends up back underneath the boat. But yeah, just kind of sit and wait for it.
Are you drifting?
No, usually anchored.
Set up and chummed?
Yeah.
Chummed up real good. Yes. Now, are you doing this at night primarily or during the day? Or
during the day. Late afternoon seems to be the best bite.
Okay. Hmm. Sunset time?
Yeah, right around sunset or depending on when the tide changes.
Okay.
Tide change will really get them eaten as well.
So now is that incoming or outgoing?
Either or. Just the change.
Just moving water. They like the moving water.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you ever make your own chum?
I have, not chum bags, but we will chum the water, you know, just cut up some of the frozen bait we got mm-hmm. and just throw it in along with the chum bags.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing this in Bull Bay, you said? Bull Bay's getting you a lot of...
Outside of Bull Bay, there's a few deeper spots.
Okay.
Maybe the 14-foot, 15-foot.
Using wire leaders, the hooks and all that stuff,
what size
right?
hook?
Hook size
6, 7, 8.
I'm gonna say about 5 or 6.
Spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just think it's funny. We were playing, listening to a show we just recorded, and these guys chatting away. I turn on the recorder, and it's like, okay. So, we got to get back. I mean, you guys are literally awesome at this, but we're gonna get back to a little bit more of the interchange. Excuse me. So what do you guys like to talk about? What do you guys like to fish? What do you guys like to do? Jeannie, how hard was it to choose a boat to buy? Now, you went out to choose a boat. What was that like going out and saying, okay, I'm going to get a boat. How did you decide what you wanted?
I pretty well knew. I knew that I wanted a skiff. That I knew because I do like to fish inshore. I like something that I could get skinny, so I knew that I wanted a skiff. Hughes has just always been, in my opinion, the leader in the skiff industry. And I knew I wanted it small. I wanted something small enough that I could push pull. And, you know, for the most part, it's just me on my boat myself. So that was, I knew, I pretty much had it.
I can honestly tell you, that's the smart thing. We get people coming down all the time, and I tell them, pick a boat that's the size for you, or, you know, if it's a husband and wife, pick a boat that's good mm-hmm. for you two,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, not uncomfortable to put maybe one or two more people on there. But don't choose a boat to take the crowds with.
Sure.
Because it's your boat. You're going to be using it. Everybody comes down to visit, like, the first year you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second year a little bit. But by the third year, they're not coming down here very much.
Right.
So you're pretty much going to be you guys. If you get that great big boat, it's hard to handle.
Yep. And I like my boat being small. And I'm diehard fisherman. You know, I might go set up at the sandbar every now and again. But not very often. My boat's really not a pleasure boat.
And so it's by what, how long is your boat?
18 foot.
So it's still kind of easier to trailer, back mm-hmm. up, store.
Yep. It's versatile. I mean, I can take it out offshore, you know, a couple miles if I want to, or, you know, on a nice calm day. Inside, I've got a jack plate on it, you know, so I can, there's not much that I can't run on the inside. I can get up into them skinny little creeks. And so the Hughes Redfisher was just it's just an amazing boat. And so when I went hunting my boat, I was pretty certain that I wanted a Hughes Redfisher. If you wanted to show me something else, I may have had my ears open to it, but the Hughes Redfisher was what I wanted. And
What size motor are you running?
I have a 150 four-stroke
so
on the back of
18
it.
18 with a 150.
It's a heavy old thing.
That
I ain't gonna
scream.
Lie to you. It'll get jiggy with it. There's no doubt. I can push it about 50 if I'm trimmed up real good. Then it's a nice calm day. I can get about 50. Now it'll get squirrely on you. I ain't saying it's not gonna be a scary ride, but she will get gone when I need her to, and that's usually only when the storm's rolling in on me.
Well, what's amazing, and I find amazing down here, is we get these storms that come up, but you can literally see them.
Yes.
And right before some of the most severe thunderstorms, the water gets like glass.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that pressure's coming in, it's kind of dropping, and before the intense winds, before the rain, before that front actually gets there, all of a sudden the waves are gone.
It's
and it's
calm before the storm.
And it kind of gets that little tiny dimpling on
the little
it,
ripple.
And you're like, oh my God, I know what's coming next. So you could put it down, get that nose up, trim it out, and you're flying up the harbor.
Especially in an 18-foot boat. It is time to put that hammer down.
I mean, I'm like Jeannie. I got a 16-foot Carolina skiff, and it's got a 40 horse on it. But that thing will go. It'll go.
Now, do you notice that before the storms, how it gets that little dimply on it?
Yes, sir. You're out there by yourself, and you can hear the frogs, you can hear the birds, you can hear everything. The things rustling in the grass and the mangroves, and then all of a sudden it's just like a black cloud. Not like a black cloud, but like all of a sudden it's just like, and it's like dead silence.
That was exactly what happened on Saturday.
That's when you're like, it's time to go. It's
time for us to go.
But I don't know how many times you outran storms. I think it's pretty fun. You get on the outside of them, then I'm past, and then stop.
But Saturday, same thing. Got that slick, calm water. Yep. And then we had that black cloud above us. And then you looked over, and maybe 200 yards, you had that wall of water.
Yeah, you can smell it coming before you can
and
see it.
Just as you start to smell that coming, matter of a minute or two, and the wind hits.
Oh, yeah.
And that
is.
Wind can be 60 miles an hour.
Yep.
You go from dead flat to 4 footers instantly.
Yep. It can be scary. It can be real scary. So, you know, that boat typically comes with a 115 on it, is what they, what Hughes normally puts on it. The 150 was the option. But I really like having that extra, just because down here our weather can change so rapidly. Just
give me power.
Right.
Speed. I want to go fast.
Well, you know, I mean, there's that too. But
those raindrops really hurt.
They do.
All right. Have you either you tied up to the? Okay, the storm's coming. You know you ain't getting away. The wind kicks up. You ever run the nose up the mangroves and just hide out?
Oh yeah. Lots of times.
I'm telling you, that's like, if you haven't, you ain't been on a boat enough.
Yep.
I mean,
well, just
sometimes
to that point where you're like, yeah, we're not gonna make it. We'll probably be safer just to beach it and hide rather than get pelted and not be able to see where you're going.
That's the thing.
So
that stuff hurts.
Yeah,
it's
does.
Like, I mean, it's like being on a motorcycle or something. I could imagine, but that stuff hurts coming at you. And you can be at the just an idol, and that stuff. It's like little.
I've noticed since I've moved down here, it sounds like it's always hailing when it rains here.
Yeah.
And it's just the raindrops. When it hails, it's intense. We get it out of my house like the size of nickels and quarters.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's unbelievable because I'm constantly after that going up checking the roof because sometimes, I mean, it is unbelievable noise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you just beat her up and get you under something.
My only problem is everyone, you know, if your boat's automatic bailing, it's not bad where the water can run out through the scuppers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I've had times where the bilge pump had a hard time keeping up to the rain, and the boat's filling up with water, and you're bailing it out, bailing it out.
Yeah. Well, I've got. I went way overboard, for lack of better words, with my bilge pump. So I have a 1,100 gallon per hour bilge pump on my boat with an automatic float. One of my biggest fears in the whole world is my boat sinking.
Oh, yeah.
My biggest fear.
I have two.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I sunk mine, so.
I'm scared to death.
My brother has a constant ulcer when it rains in the summertime. because he has both shrimp boats. He's gonna make sure stay afloat.
Yeah,
and don't get tied under the dock.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a constant ulcer.
Mm-hmm. Especially hurricane season. Oh my goodness. It's. I know they just did a big article in, you know, the paper in the Waterline about hurricane season and how to protect your assets and your boat and whatnot, but it's nerve-wracking. It's, for me, it's real nerve-wracking, even fully insured, but I love my boat. I don't...
The best way to protect your boat during a hurricane, where do you tie your boat? On blacktop? Do you park on blacktop or you park under grass?
I don't. I have mine in a grass, gravel
field. That's the easiest way to tie it down. I use those screw-in trailer tie downs. Yeah, those ones that screw in.
Mm-hmm.
You go out with a crowbar, a little whatever, screw those in where the tires are,
mm-hmm.
and run a strap over it.
Yep.
Lower the nose down and put the plug in the boat. And the rain will fill the boat up. The strap will keep it there.
See, that's what I've always heard is put the plug in the boat and then put, you know, either put water in it or let the rain
fill it up and have weight
on it.
But
and
if you have... you put the plug in the bottom and then you take out any deck level scuppers. Otherwise your boat can completely fill with water and it will burst the hull open. I mean, literally just crush the boat. I've gone out and so, you know, just put it on the trailer, put two of those tie downs in, put a strap over it, and then just put the plug in. But any deck level holes, make sure the plugs are out of those.
I don't have plugs in my scuppers. And that's one of my things, too. Even in the rain, I always take the plug out of my boat just because my trailer has leaf springs. So, you know, I'm worried about that added extra weight on my trailer.
Yeah, I never leave the plug in until a hurricane comes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and with a hurricane, I'd rather lose the leaf springs than... And just park it there in your bed.
Okay, so is it bad that when a hurricane comes, you take your brand new car out of the garage and put your boat in there?
No, it's not.
Is that bad?
Nope.
It's easier to get money for the car than
it is
the boat.
Exactly.
That's how it's done.
He's like, what is the car doing out there? You know there's a hurricane coming. And I was like, well, the boat's in the garage. And he just looked at me like, what?
But it's my boat.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's genius.
Yeah, that's what
I don't see a problem with
it. We got insurance on the car, you know? More insurance than
Right, exactly. I have insurance.
Let that thing go.
Yeah.
My boat would be safe.
So was this your first boat that you had ever bought?
So I've always had boats. My parents always had boats. When I was married, we always had boats. This is my very first boat on my own. So this is the, I've always done the boating thing with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been around it. I've had the basics. I did not realize how much I did not know until I bought my very own boat and did it myself on my own. I have learned how much I really didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a great learning curve, but we could go into a whole nother show, y'all know, with the things that
boat maintenance.
Oh my! Well, boat maintenance, just simple things like putting it in the water. You know, when you've got somebody standing behind the truck and you're winching it down and getting them off, or you're pumping on the brakes to get the boat off the trailer, and you've got somebody in the boat, it's a heck of a lot easier than doing it yourself.
Yeah.
Now you've got the boat down in the trailer and it doesn't want to get off. What do? You know, there's just a lot of things that come up when you're doing it on your own.
And as we talked about before, the boat ramp's pretty stressful.
Yes, it is.
So,
but I've actually gotten applause at the boat ramp, too. So I think when you pull up as a single female, you definitely do have an advantage.
Yeah, you can hear them whispering.
People have a lot more patience when you're a single female and you pull up at the boat ramp than...
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us today. We had fun talking with you. Get out there fishing.
So, goodbye from
Alex, Jeannie, Heather, and Dee.
Fishy, fishy.